There is an interesting thread that I wanted to talk about on Ball Truth Talk. And the reason I think it's important that we're speaking to you about it is because you've recently gotten back from Turkey.
Twice.
You recently did an undercover kind of expose investigation type of a scenario when you went into a hair transplant posing as a patient.
Hair transplant clinic, I should say. Yeah.
Posing as a patient, and you kind of reported back on what the experience was. And this week, I guess it was an older thread, but it was kind of like reignited, if that's the right term, by a couple of guys who went to a certain clinic in Turkey, one of these, I guess, typical tech-only clinics or, you know, mostly tech clinics.
And
had some really, at least according to them, horrific results. I saw that you jumped into the thread to kind of give them a little moral support. But I just took a look at it a little while ago, and I saw the images that this one patient from, I think he was from Houston or Dallas, and correct me if I'm wrong, he posted his donor after, what is it, how many weeks is it, 4 weeks, 3 weeks?
Actually, I've not seen those yet, because there are two patients actually taking part in this.
There's one that I think he called himself American guy. Well, anyway, it's one of the most depleted donors that I have ever seen. Even 2 weeks post-op, there is no, in my view, the fucking way that this poor guy's head should look like this.
I'm seeing it now for the first time.
If you talk about over-harvesting, and I saw some over-harvesting images that have been posted on Bald Truth Talk before. Usually, though, these guys are shaved down to, like, a number two. This guy's let his hair grow for a couple of months. And it's pretty grown out. I mean, it looks like it's at least an inch and a half long, right?
Yeah. This guy, I'm trying to remember how far out he is from his... Because there's a guy that just had it done, and then there's the second guy that had his procedure a few months ago. And I don't remember. I think it was maybe 4 or 5 months ago. That's how long that is. So, yeah. Sorry, I'm just seeing this for the first time. The images. I've not looked at the thread since yesterday.
Well, listen. I think it's important that people understand that when patients come on to Bald Truth Talk and want to complain about a certain doctor or clinic, whether they're in the IHS or whether they are a large chain clinic, whomever they're complaining about, we in 99.9% of the cases will put them into a private moderated section where they then be asked a number of questions about who they are, just to kind of make sure that these guys are real patients. This particular case, these two cases seemed to be so egregious that the mods kind of felt that it wasn't necessary to even bring them into the private area. Because it was, I would say 98% of the time when we get a complaint, we find out that it's a phony complaint. These complaints look completely legitimate.
Yeah, they do. And while you're going through that, to bring people up to speed, I was reviewing the thread again real quick. One of the two is 6 weeks out. And then the one that posted his images, he had – and this is what's interesting.
Do me a favor, Joe. Can you back up from your mic just a little bit?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah,
how's that?
It's good.
They're good? Okay.
Yeah.
The guy that came in afterwards to kind of reinforce the issue that the first patient went through, he said that he went in for 700 grafts. The doctor talked him into 2,000, and they wound up getting 3,300. And that's the guy that posted his depleted donor zone. And I'm reacquainting myself with this, and I'm looking at that image, and that's blowing my mind. This is probably the worst case of donor depletion that I've seen, and I'm wondering if how much of this. I can't see how far out he is from his procedure, but if it's still fairly early days, just a few months, this could be donor shock that might return.
Well, that's what I want. I definitely wanted to talk about, because I don't want this guy to think that it's all over, that this is it. It's very possible that he did get a significant amount of donor shock, especially if they were incredibly aggressive, which it seems like they were. And I should put the camera on me now, which it seems like they were. In a scenario like that, just the mechanics of the surgery itself could cause a lot of donor telogen effluvium. So it's very possible that at least a percentage of that hair is going to grow back. It doesn't necessarily mean that all of that, you know, that bare area and that pink area that looks, you know, it kind of looks like fibrotic tissue, but it could just be pink because of the procedure. That right. could end up filling in. So I don't want him to think that it's over.
It very well could. I've actually seen this with strip as well, where it's extremely rare. I've only seen maybe two cases of this in the past 10 years of being in clinics, but where a strip's taken and then a majority of the donor zone above and below the incision line of the strip also went into shock. And it had actually a worse appearance than this, and it all came back. So as this is settling in, I'm starting to think that that's probably what's going on, because I know that this particular patient is no more than, I think, 4 months maximum.
And you can kind of see the pattern. It doesn't necessarily just appear like a pure over-harvest to me. You know, there's right. definitely an over-harvest. There's no doubt in my mind. But just the way that just the way the bare areas are kind of configured, it looks like there's some shock loss.
Yeah. Yeah, I definitely agree with that. That's I feel bad for the guy. I left a message online that both of them can call in, because I'd love for them to get the message and call in and tell us more about their experience firsthand. I mean, when I was there for this covert it sounds silly, but this covert operation.
But it's not silly. It's actually I mean, I think it was a really important thing that you did. And I think that just by, you know, presenting this to the public and letting these guys know, who are just, you know, they're trying to save a buck. And I understand that. We all want to save money. We, you know, and especially guys who might not have otherwise been able to afford surgical hair restoration. You're like, wait a second. I finally fucking have an opportunity to do this. I'm going to get this done.
Right,
but they're still not doing their due diligence, because there are places you can go, you know, and travel abroad and get a decent price on a hair transplant. It's probably going to cost you a little bit more to go to, you know, someone really great. But, you know, sadly, when you're just dealing with price, you're dealing with surgery as a commodity. This is the kind of shit that happens. So by you going in there and showing how things go down, I think it's invaluable.
Well, you know, what inspired me to do that was during my first, I think I touched on this when we were first talking about this on an earlier broadcast, but the thing that inspired me to do this was my first visit to Turkey, when I was first visiting and documenting my journey to see Dr. Karadeniz in Istanbul. And someone sent me a clip about the Turkish hair transplant tourism market, or more specifically, it was medical tourism with a highlight on hair restoration. And it was by the CBC, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, and they actually sent a correspondent to Istanbul to interview a clinic, which was in a prestigious hospital, and more on that later. But they also spoke to some patients, and they were speaking to patients that were out on the street. And the reason that they were able to do this is because they're everywhere. And they literally, I think they just walked up to one of these patients and said, can we interview you? And it was someone from the Middle East saying, oh, yeah, come to Istanbul, you know, have a hair transplant, get my hairline back, and have a holiday. It's fantastic.
But let me ask, can you imagine that happening, a news crew going to, like, you know, somewhere in Beverly Hills? And just going up to chicks on the street who just had boob jobs. I mean, to me, it's basically, you know, it's tantamount to that. It's that insane.
It is that insane, but there are more guys walking around with fresh hair transplants in Istanbul than there are in Beverly Hills with fresh boob jobs.
Well, yes, absolutely.
And it was just, I mean, both times I've been there, it's like the hotel I'm staying in, I go down to get my breakfast, and there's five guys, all went to different clinics. That also had, you know, they're fresh. I mean, no bandages. You can still see that they had it like the day before or earlier that day. And even on the streets, like when I went to the old city and I'm just walking around, several guys. Hell, I went to first night I was there on my first visit. I think I told you this. Five waiters had hair transplants just in my immediate area.
That's amazing. It's so funny. Yeah. You know, you were explaining that just about everywhere you go, whether it was in the hotel lobby, whether it was, you know, when you were in reception, whether it was the restaurant, whether it was at the bar, everyone had a hair transplant.
Yeah, it was insane. It's because it's priced for the everyday man. I mean, waiters, 5 of them out of the 10, I mean, 50% of the waiters I saw, this is not an exaggeration, had hair transplants. And they were okay. I mean, they weren't, you know, IAHRS quality, but, you know, they were okay. I mean, they weren't absolute disasters.
Let's be honest. Sometimes even IHRS docs aren't producing IHRS quality. Sometimes that just happens. I hate to say it.
No, it does.
I'm just being 100% honest. That's why it's so important. Whoever watches this broadcast, whoever listens to this show, yes, you know, I created this organization a long time ago to try to separate the best doctors from all of the rest. But it's cosmetic surgery. Anything can fucking go wrong.
Anything does go wrong.
Right. So even if you go to, you know, you do your research, you go to an IHRS doctor, you go to an IHRS clinic that has, you know, some of the best trained staffs in the world, things happen. They could have a bad day, or it could just be, you know, for whatever reason, biologically incompatible with this type of surgery, or you may not have been the candidate that they thought that you were initially, whatever. And I think people just need to be prepared for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, all they can do is do their research. They can go to the IHRS, obviously, IHRS.org, and go to Bald Truth Talk and, you know, take their time to do their due diligence and learn about the procedure. But you can't expect a home run every time. And I want people to know that.
And, you know, So the reason why I did this was because of this article this piece I saw on CBC, and that inspired me. It's like, well, I'm here, or I'm coming back, so why don't I just try to set something up to really show what this piece completely missed the point on? I mean, it was a complete fluff piece. I saw this, and I thought, wow, they actually sent a correspondent from Toronto to Istanbul just for this story, camera crew and all. This must be serious. As I'm watching it, it turned into just another fluff piece between the sports and weather.
Well, of course, that's all it is. Listen, I was just...
You can have hope. I was watching. I had hope.
Well, you can't, but I was interviewed. It was like a 45-minute interview by a major news organization this week. And it really, you know, when you guys see it, it is really a fluff piece, except I try to bring, you know, the gravity of hair loss into the equation to kind of let this reporter know just how important it is to guys and women who are dealing with hair loss and how it affects their lives. And that's why this particular person, and I can't get into it right now, has decided to, you know, kind of deny the fact that he's actually balding. And this is a, you know, very public person, and you guys will see the story. But It was sad to me to listen to it, just to hear the questions. And then, you know, midway, you know, through the interview, she kind of got it. But it doesn't mean that that's what's going to be, you know, that's going to equate into a story that is a serious piece. Because what's going to happen is she may put some of the stuff that I discussed into the piece. Her editor is going to whittle it down into what they need for that space in that paper. And that's it. That's the way that it works. So my advice is, and I really appreciate, believe me, when the press comes to me and they do for, I would say, 75% of the hair loss stories that are out there, I really appreciate that because I know that at least they're doing their research. And every once in a while, they get some really powerful lines in the piece. But you still got to read everything and take everything with a grain of salt. That's just the way that it is.
Of course.
You know, that's why the show is so important. But no matter what, like, okay, we just got some press recently. Don't want to talk about specifically, but it's a major magazine. This guy who actually contacted us is a guy that wrote two of the best pieces I've ever read on the world of hair loss.
One of them was broke open a pretty controversial subject at the time.
Absolutely. So I think he gets it.
And, I think he does too.
Yeah, and I think this piece is going to be incredible. But that's usually not the case. So, yeah, I mean, what do you expect? And especially when you have 2.5 minutes at most to do something on a television newscast, you're not going to get too in-depth. There's not going to be too much substance.
It's not like it's going to be like this big in-depth expose on,
right?
You know, with 2020 getting all jacked about it.
So. But that's, sadly, even when 2020 did a couple of things on hair loss, or that whole thing on Bosley back in the day, with I think it was Dateline.
Yeah,
it was still severely lacking. There was still a lot of fluff. There was still a lot of misinformation. There was still a lot of. Actually, as bad as it portrayed large chain clinics back in the day, which was really, I think, important, and it definitely did some good, it still missed the mark at a level that it's so difficult to explain unless you really understand the industry.
Yeah, and that's the challenge is because almost no one understands the industry, they look at this and it's just, another glossed over fluff piece.
So go on. I'm sorry. I interrupt you all the time. So
no, that's okay. I'm there. Used to it. Yeah. I'm married. No. where was I? So
you were talking about just basically first you were walking everywhere. There's somebody with a bandage on their head or without a bandage. Then you saw this piece being recorded.
That's right. Yeah. So I got inspired. It's like, well, why don't I just try to set something up? I'm coming back in 3 weeks or inside of a month, I'm coming back to Istanbul for the FUE workshop that was going on. And so I decided to set something up. And so I did some research. I found some clinics that were easy to find, that were obviously these one of these tech mills. And I started communicating with one of the reps. And very, very pushy, very salesy. When are you coming? When are you coming? And I kept saying, well, I'm coming on this day, but, I got a lot of stuff going on. And this guy was going out of his way. Customer service was A+. He was going out of his way to make sure that I knew that wherever I was on any given day, he could send a car to pick me up to bring me to the clinic for consultation.
Sure.
Didn't matter where I was. They're on the European side of Istanbul. I was on the Asian side. It's like a 45-minute one-way trip with traffic on a good day.
Right.
And they're going to send a car to pick me up. And they did.
But as inexpensive as it is, the profit margin is still, because they're doing such volume.
The volume is nuts.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
So
when you're doing 20 guys at 1,500 euros a pop for X number of graphs, it doesn't matter.
I wouldn't be surprised, and I'm not saying this ever happens, but I wouldn't be surprised if you said, you know what? I'm a little tense. I'd like to get a hooker. If you could arrange that for me, I'd appreciate it. I wouldn't be surprised if there are some, there'd be some, what are they called? The middlemen?
I have no idea. Oh. But that's part two of my documentary series coming up.
That's when you get your transplant. That's when you go undercover in Thailand, I think.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, just to recap, they brought me in, rushed me upstairs through the hospital entrance, rushed me upstairs to the floor that they had, and I came out of the elevator, and it was just like, it was like Wall Street. It was like bodies just flying back and forth in the hallway in front of me, and someone grabbed me and said, "Come, we need to take your blood." What? They dragged me into this room.
It's insane.
And they drew my blood. Now, it wasn't like a syringe where they do, vials and vials of blood. It's like, what do you call it? Diabetes.
Like when you prick your finger. Well,
yeah, exactly.
But this is what's interesting. You explained this to me, and I think that this is very telling. You're a guy who's been in the industry for a long time. You're a guy who's been through bad surgeries. You're a guy who is, pretty savvy at this stage in your life. You're a 45-year-old man, and you still felt a little intimidated by the process. Like
I did.
Like, wait a second. Okay, they're going to take my blood. All right, that's what they want to do. I guess that's the protocol.
I had this moment where it was like, do I do this or not? And it happened so fast. I remember thinking, okay, I guess I need to do this if I want to go through with this whole thing. But it's also one of those things where you're done and you got the gauze in your finger and you're just kind of sitting there on the side of the hallway afterwards. And I'm going, I can't believe I just did that. And I said this on the last time I talked about this, the last program, that I was actually transported back to that time when I was sitting in front of Dr. Norris in 1992, when he looked at me and said, you need a hair transplant. And I said, no, I don't. And he says, yes, you do. And I said, I guess I do. And being herded like a farm animal into what he wanted me to do.
Dude, I
was transported back to that feeling. It's like, holy shit. It's like they got it down to a science.
Dude, I was a kid, and I was sitting in Dr. Norman Ornstreich's office, who, as if anyone, you know, especially the young guys, they may not even know who he is, but this is the grandfather of surgical hair restoration. This is the guy that kind of reinvented surgical hair restoration here in the U.S., the guy that
ripped it off from the Japanese.
Oh, well, I'm not saying that, but that's some people's opinion. But, yeah. You know, he's the guy that wrote the initial paper on the donor dominance theory and really started, you know, transplanting these 4-millimeter plugs. And frankly, in my view, he's the guy that kind of really set the path and the tone for so many of the hundreds of thousands of walking wounded that have suffered tremendously over the years, because he chose to write about and he chose to perform what most would consider a pretty aesthetically unpleasing form of surgical hair restoration. With that said, he sat me down in his office. I was 20, in my early 20s, and he told me that, look, if you're my own kid, I would suggest that you have this done. And if you don't like it, just try a few. And I promise you, you're going to like it. But if you don't like it, you don't have to come back. Now, at the time, each graft was $25. So even if I got, you know, whatever, 100 grafts, you know, that's $2,500 right there. Back in, what, 1987, 88? That's the math, right?
Jesus.
That's how much would it
cost.
But anyway. Yeah. But my question was, I had no real discernible, visible hair loss. It was a general thinning. My hairline may have receded slightly, so it was probably slightly miniaturized, but it was really nothing. You couldn't put any grafts anywhere. It would have made absolutely no sense. I would have suffered from shock loss. I would have had like four millimeter plugs put in the temporal region, and like it had these horns, these permanent horns implanted into my scalp. And this guy was willing to do this. And for some reason, I had the wherewithal to step back and just say, there's something wrong here. And also, I think what solidified it for me was when I told him that I would think about it, he noticed that I had ingrown hair in my beard line. And he said, you know what, let my nurse take care of that for you. I'm like, oh, thanks. That's, you know, that's really nice of you. So she takes care of it. And then I go to check out. I get a bill for $280. Okay. So that's when I knew that, you know, there's something.
That you're being taken care of.
Yeah. And there's something really wrong here.
Yeah.
And then I started to continue to do my research, man. You know, and this is a true story as well. Even after the book became an international bestseller, I was on the radio for 7 years. I was still getting calls, sales calls from the hair club. Guys who were going through old leads trying to sell me a fucking wig.
Yep.
And I'm like, it's Cobrin. K-O, you just called Spencer Cobrin. Do you know, you ever hear the bald truth? And this one guy actually laughed. This one sales guy.
Yeah.
And he said they basically, and again, I'm not going to give this guy's name out, they give these guys old leads. And basically they just sit there and they cold called people.
Yeah. That's a hardcore sales baby right there.
But that's what the whole industry is about. You know, that's why it's so difficult. And people have to understand there is help out there. But it's so hard to find.
Did it fit well? Did it look good?
You know what? Honestly, at one point when I went into the hair club, I had to really like pry out of them before they told me what it was. I'm like, okay, what exactly are you going to do?
It's a strand-by-strand hair transplant.
Right. It was a microfiber, whatever, strand-by-strand biomatrix, they called it at the time. And I'm sitting there. First, the hot girl comes in. I'm with my girlfriend at the time. And she comes in. She's like, you know, you're a very attractive young man, and you don't want to start to lose your looks. And I'm sure that your beautiful girlfriend would prefer you to keep your hair. And she's just sitting there like she didn't even know what to say at this point.
Yeah.
And then she takes a Polaroid. This is how old I am. A Polaroid of the back of my head. And I look bald.
Yeah.
And there was really no bald spot.
She used a flash.
She used a flash.
Yeah.
So if it wasn't for my girlfriend being there at the time, I would have been like, holy mother of God. I had no clue. And she looked at it and she's like, that's not you. She's, I don't know what they did. She wasn't the sharpest tool in the shed, this girl. But what a rack. But anyway.
She's sharp enough.
but she was able to, she said, look, there's something going on here. Anyway, by the end of the consultation, finally they sent the guy in. And I'm like, that's a wig. The guy's wearing a wig. And like, we don't like to call it a wig. We like to call it, a hair system. It's hair replacement. So as soon as I found out that they had to shave your head to put this thing on, I was out of there. So I guess I was just, I'm not going to say smart enough. I guess I was just paranoid enough and inquisitive enough to really figure out, I wasn't as desperate as a lot of guys who just kind of jump into the process and they just want to get fixed.
Yeah. They were trying to make you more desperate by showing you that picture that they completely doctored and just shock you into signing on the dotted line.
Well, I will say this. I almost destroyed my life. There was a company that was later investigated, and it was a pretty major deal. At the time, they were in Cinnaminson, New Jersey. So I had to drive 2 hours from Manhattan to Cinnaminson, New Jersey for a consultation. And basically what it was is they were sewing hair pieces into people's heads. And I'm like, wait, this. It seemed like the way that they presented it is like, this is the perfect fucking solution. I can keep my own hair. It goes through this mesh. And they have a doctor that comes in. This is all medical and surgical, right? And they sew this wig onto your scalp.
Of course.
And I called the guy up and I said I was going to do it. And he was stoked. And then I waited a couple of days and he kept calling me. And I said, you know what? I think if I do anything, maybe I'll get a transplant in the front and if I need to wear something in the back. And I was just figuring it all out. But anyway, that would have destroyed my life. And then 2 weeks later, I saw this poor guy on ABC News in New York who had had the process done and had like some severe abscesses and really bad infections and lost half the hair in his head after it was removed. And he had permanent scarring. It was just a mess. So I'm bringing up all this old stuff because it's still happening today.
Were they doing tunnel grafts?
No, actually, it wasn't a tunnel graft.
Sorry, not tunnel grafts, but the it's the tunnel equivalent for hair systems where they
basically sew a flap. They make a flap out of skin and they connect it. No, they weren't doing that. They were actually literally just suturing it through your skin.
Yeah,
and then tying a knot.
So for those people that are watching and don't know the different versions that used to be available, they also used to have a system that had hooks, and it would hook into the scalp, literally into the skin, where they would make a flap, and you had three flaps, one in the front and two in the back on either side, and this thing would slip back, hook, and then pull it down, hook it up, and you're locked in.
To see that
come off and to see those... The first time I saw that about 9 years ago, I just didn't know what the hell to say.
Well, it was actually pretty amazing. The first time that I saw it was a guy came into the studio. I was on WOR radio in New York. And he came into the studio. He had the fucking thing attached. And he wanted me to see it. And he had constant infections.
Yeah.
But they basically create this little flap of tissue. And make into like a tunnel, like an eye, for
a needle,
a
needle eye.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah. So the audience, it's like if you've never seen this, it's I mean, the first time you would ever see this, to even think about this, imagine this.
But imagine how bad it was. I mean, you think about how bad it is today. Imagine how bad it was back then, back in our day.
Oh, dude, guys today have no clue what it used to be.
I mean, there were people. I mean, there were. I think some of these trichologists were using leeches, if I'm not mistaken.
I would doubt it.
I don't know.
I would doubt it.
I don't know. We got a couple of phone calls. I want to take a call. Actually, this is a familiar area code. So let me take this one first. Let's see who this is. Hey, man, you're on the air. Who's this and where are you calling from?
Hey, it's Curtis from Virginia.
Curtis, how are you, man?
What's wrong? Good, good.
What's up, it's Curtis?
Bringing back some bad memories tonight.
Sorry about that.
Sorry.
I think this would be good, a cautionary tale. I'm 52. I've had 6 hair transplants. But started in the 80s when it was, it's just been, just a roller coaster. But I started in the 80s and they did the plugs and they wrapped you in the turban.
Yeah.
You were done.
Tell your story because the guys that are just tuning in for the first time should hear this. Right. But I remember your story. It's intense.
Yeah. Yeah. So I was saying like 21, 22, freaking out. I mean, just like, devastated, that this was happening and people were starting to, guys think it's funny, your friends kidding around. And so, I was wearing the hat, all that. So then I guess I can say his name, right? I mean,
absolutely.
He was well known at the time, Weidig in D.C.
Oh, dude. I mean, his name is still floating around.
And, he had a mill going on. I mean, there would be like probably 10 to 15 patients a day at least, if that tells you anything. And
sounds like turkey.
So I went in.
Yeah.
And so I'm, 22, 23. And there's no internet. There's no.
Well, you and I are the same age. You're like a year or two older than me. But that was a really tough time.
Yeah. And you see ads in the magazine for potions. It's right. You're 21. You don't know. And you still kind of believe people aren't trying to rip you off, right? You think that we don't see the world that way at that time, right?
Oh, we have no idea. Yeah. We actually think that these are doctors who are going to help us.
Yeah, I mean, you don't think that. Anyway, so, and what sold me was he had a picture of Brooks Robinson, and that sold me in 1980, whatever, 4 or 5, right? I mean, if Brooks Robinson was in there, that's all I need to know.
Yeah, but it was just a signed picture.
No, he did it. I mean, it looked
I'm just
okay,
joking.
I guess. Yes, it looked okay and everything. I mean, it wasn't come back. But I mean, that did it. That was my invent. That was it. That was research.
Right.
Right.
Sure.
Boom. So, it cost me not a lot. I think it's $1,500 for 3 different sessions of plugs and then another one. And I mean, I'll tell you, they worked. I'll tell you what, they grow to this day. What he did worked. And, I had thick, coarse hair, so luckily, I was able to, through getting up in the morning and messing around for, 45 minutes and hairspray and all that.
But that's the thing. You're one of the guys that had, thicker diameter. It was coarser hair. Even if you had larger grafts, if you had enough hair, it could be relatively indistinguishable to, a person who's not really looking for it.
Right. I was able to, but the worst part of my life is like you talk about. I mean, you're living with this kind of like secret, hair spread. It was an illusion, it looks like I had a ton of hair and I still to this day. So then, I loved my life, I got married and my wife is going, it looks fine. You worry too much about it. You use too much hairspray. I don't know why you're so, she couldn't grasp
the gravity of it, and that always bothered me. And that's why I think one of the reasons why I was always, and I settled down with the woman who I settled down with because she never, ever, said a fucking word. She would just be like, "You look wonderful. I understand you got to do what you got to do." I used to go out with girls talking about the too much hairspray stuff. In the 80s, you can get away with it because a lot of hairspray was in. But once that was kind of out of style, then everyone, every girl that I was going with was like, why do you wear so much hairspray? I can't even touch your hair. I'm like,
right.
Because I'm balding. and I don't like it. I'm trying to do, you know, and I would say, why do you wear so much makeup? You know?
I mean, we went there. It was a whole thing. So then that's 4 hair transplants with that guy, right? So that gets me through some years where, again, you know, spending, like, trying to get it to look okay and cover. Then as you're getting older or so, it starts to thin, and then you can start to see some of the thin area. You know, then it starts to become a little more noticeable as I get into my 30s.
Right.
Because, you know, I mean, more is falling out. So then I go to another guy. This must be in the 90s, and he said, no, we're past plugs now. We have mini grafts now.
Right. Now we're really state-of-the-art.
Yeah. Still on the internet. Right. You know, we have whatever they were called. Why am I saying that mini graft?
No, you're saying it correctly. That's exactly what it was.
But luckily, I was just like you. I've become so paranoid. He goes, and I thank God I didn't let him do this. He wanted to take out the plug. But I was like, look, I can live with what I have. I am not going backwards. You know what I mean?
There's
no freaking way you're taking anything out. You know what I mean? It's because I can live, right? It's not the best, but I'm the worst case. I'm good. I just thank God I didn't let him take stuff out.
That's an important thing that you're stating right now, because the bottom line is in your healthcare in general, it really is your choice. You have to make the final decision. You can't choose to do something just based on the recommendation of your physician. And if you don't like that recommendation, you could always get a second or third opinion to see what the other guys are recommending as well.
Yeah.
You went with your gut.
This had been available. Yeah, but something like this, oh my God. I mean, just would have been. So I did the thing and it helped, you know, filled in some spots. And then about 5 years ago, I went to someone in Richmond. Not on your list, because I didn't even know about you guys then. And it's a clinic, and it's a woman who's not a doctor, but she does. You probably know. You actually did her for, you know, pretty good. She did the
what's her name?
Strip, but it's called the Virginia Surgical Center.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. And
but there actually is a physician connected to that surgical center. So
right, but he doesn't do the procedure.
Isn't that wild? So you actually had the strip removed by a non-physician actually operated on you?
No. The physician did the strip.
Okay. All right.
Well, the physician did the strip, then she did all the rest, but she spent like 10 hours, I got to say.
Well, I mean, I will say what it sounds like you had done was stick in place, and there are some very well-known clinics out there that do really good stick in place procedures.
But my point was, she wasn't a correction specialist. You know, she wasn't. So where I am now, after all this time, and I'm really truncating this, you know, a lot of just shitty times. We've done a lot of I have to travel, and what if I get to the hotel and I can't. It affects your life in every way. The little ways that people could never understand.
It's almost a subconscious influence that just, you know, every waking moment there's something that reminds you of what's on your head. For me, it's like if I knew it was going to rain, I wouldn't leave the house.
Yeah. Or real windy.
I look like a flock of seagulls because I had so much hairspray on my head.
That's my line.
Walking
dude.
Down the street, wind would come by, and I'd be like this.
Yeah, I still. There's still a story. The associate producer for the Tom Likas show will tell this story. I'm going to have him on the show one day, and you know, I was walking with him on Sunset Boulevard, and we were getting some pizza. We had just gone to this other studio, and this is when I first came to Los Angeles, and it was a crazy windy day. So I turned around to, you know, just so I didn't have to face the wind. And I was making believe I was looking at the architecture around the Hustler store on Sunset. And to this day, he still makes fun of that because he knew exactly what I was doing.
Yes.
You know?
And then you're always worried about people that are looking. I mean, you still have that paranoia. They're staring at your head.
Dude, to this day, I cannot go to a strip club and get a lap dance because of my hair. It's ruined my entire.
Even people you're talking to, like, are they looking up?
Yeah, dude. Well, they are looking up because they don't look up initially until they know what I'm doing, and then they're staring at my hair. I mean, it could be the entire night. Yeah, then they can't help it. I'm just like, go ahead, take a look. I actually had one woman, and I was fine with it because she was a friend of Common Law's who got a little bit too loaded, and she started to pick through the back of my hair because she wanted to see the makeup, and I allowed her to, and I was fine with it. Normally, I would have broken someone's arm, you know? But it's still, yeah. It's like all of a sudden, like you're a fucking oddity.
And so up to the point, so just where now, I mean, I'm lucky. Even though it sounds like a bad story, I was able to just live a life and have 45 minutes a day of, you know, of fixing it. I mean, that was it. I mean, I could go, I could live. You know, I could do everything, live right. My life and have give. And I realized what, oh, my God. I don't know, because I guess the hair I hated when I was young, curly and coarse, it saved me in a way, right? I mean,
oh yeah,
that. It would have been brutal. So, but now what I want to do is I'm close to where I think if I just had a little bit done in the front, soften it up, I could be done like a normal person, you know. But so I'm thinking, and I wanted to ask you guys, like the guy in, he's on your list, Dr. Lindsay.
Yeah. What about him?
And just, what I want to do is maybe just a little bit of, I haven't even gone to see him yet, but just and so just a little F, just the FUE, that's the, you know, and just a little bit at a time to make sure I'm comfortable this time instead of just jumping in. Because I don't need, you know, I can, like I said, if I had to live like this the rest of my life, I could do it. You know, but what I want is to get where I don't even have to worry about it at all.
Here's the thing, though, and yes, Dr. Lindsay is certainly recommended by the IHRS, but having a few to kind of test it out, you're not going to see much of a significant cosmetic difference.
Right.
So I don't know if that's a great idea. Joe, I mean, what do you think about that?
Well, okay, I normally would agree with that because, you know, if you're going to go for 50 grafts, it's like, why waste your time? But in the case,
I'm thinking like 200 or 300.
Yeah, and that's, I think, okay. If you're talking about hairline work, then that alone can make a significant difference for your existing hairline. Bring it forward by a few millimeters, and that can really
soften it.
That can make a huge difference for you. If you're talking about more coverage and things like that, that'd be a different story.
But I don't need more coverages. That's the point I have. Like right now, I mean, I can get out of the shower and it's slicked back and wet and it looks not bad.
Yeah. No, I understand.
It's not bad at all.
I was in the same boat. It's just I didn't have probably nearly as much coverage as you do. But back in the day before I got my repair, I would slick it back and it was extremely thin. And if I could just have some softening at the time, it would have been a much, you know, a lot better. But that wasn't the case. And, different story, like I said. But in your case, I think, sight unseen, if you got coverage you're happy with, then a few hundred at a time makes all the sense in the world to me.
Yeah, because the coverage is good. I just want to soften the temples and pull in front. And I would be good to go. I mean, like, hair. I mean, like, I wouldn't even give it a thought. And to me, that's like, I don't know, you guys will understand this. That's like not even imaginable. Do you know what I mean? What would that be like, right?
Yeah.
What would that be like?
It means freedom, my friend. It means freedom. It means a weight being lifted off your shoulder that no one else can understand.
Right. I mean, that's what I even think about it. Like, am I hesitating to do it? Because, like, wow, what if it actually – I've lived with this so long. It's like, don't even want – it's so weird what happens to people.
Can you imagine if you will, for the past 20-some-odd years, 30 years, where this has been a constant, like, you know, every several seconds issue coming up in your mind. If that wasn't the case, what your life would be like productivity-wise?
But see, it's great anyway. I mean, I've like overcome it like a handicap. That's how I've looked at it.
No, and I understand that. And I was in the same boat.
But if I didn't have it, I couldn't imagine. It would be unimaginable.
But even when you can deal with it, even when it's something that you have accepted and you have moved forward in life despite the situation, it's still there. It's still there, and it's still, you know, occupying a significant portion of your mind space. And if that can be relieved,
I know people think it's silly, but it's like a disease that's cured.
No, that's exactly what it's like. I've been there. I know. And it's like the first time I had my first repair, I saw the difference to what I had 10 years before. And even at that point, before I even saw the result, everything had changed 180 degrees times 1,000. I mean, it was just, my attitude
gonna
just
do it, but I'm just like scared to think, wow, could it really even happen? I think 200 or 300 and done by, but I just want to make sure, because it's like, I don't have an unlimited, I have enough, but I can't keep, I need to, I, this has to be right. So
yeah,
he's a good doctor.
You can't keep having unlimited kicks of the bucket.
Yeah.
So talk to Dr. Lindsay. Yeah. He's going to listen to you, and he's going to present his own thoughts, of course, but talk to him about your concerns, talk to him about your fears, and, you know, just open up to him about it. And he'll guide you in the right direction.
Yeah, but he's good. Because this will be the first time in my life I've had someone tell me, like, I didn't make my own decision, that they was able to research a doc. So the service you guys are providing, I mean, I'm just telling you, it's, and for people who are out there, just I don't know what to say except trust what everybody's saying, trust what you guys are saying. There's good people and bad people and everything. And this is,
you know what?
Different.
Trust what we're saying, and that you need to do your research.
Yes.
Ask tough questions. Don't, you know, if you got a question, you think, and here's this is kind of like a pet peeve of mine now. Don't be afraid to ask a question that you think might be offensive to the doctor.
Yes.
Ask a question. Ask the tough questions. How many cases have you seen where it didn't grow? You know, things like that. I mean,
Or I want to meet somebody that you worked on, not see a picture.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you owe it to yourself, especially guys like you and me that have been down this repair road or in need of repair, that have had the procedures that have put us in this position to begin with. You owe it to yourself to actually take your time, ask the right questions, ask second opinions, third opinions for that matter. You got the internet, dude. I mean, it's like we didn't have that when we first started doing this. Spencer spent time in the library. God bless him, but you know, for his research. But
it's funny what Spencer said a couple weeks ago. I heard that it was so true that I can remember being in a bookstore because there's no internet and looking in like books on different medical issues.
It was like going to the porn section of a bookstore to look up hair loss.
You would open a book on like just medical issues and look in that section, and they would have like a diagram of it. You know, and it was, but I'm telling you, I would come out with a turban on, but I mean, they luckily, like I said, my story is not, I don't know what these people have done. I don't know how you live, because I made it through with this. I don't know what people do who these doctors have butchered them, and I can imagine what could have happened to me.
If you're watching the program right now, or actually you're going to be on a little bit of a delay, but I mean, if you look at Joe, and here's a full shot of him. He's a guy who was destroyed. And now he has what appears to be a relatively full head of hair. So this guy was walking around as a young person with insane plugs. I mean,
I'm not kidding. I don't know how. I mean, you have to think, like, is life worth it? And I know people think that's shallow, but that's a disfigurement and a betrayal. Like, not only are you disfigured, I mean, you're cynical now, you don't trust anybody, and, you know, there's a whole thing that goes into somebody doing something like that to you.
It's a completely different world. Once you've been down that road more than once, you did it four times, God bless you. I did it twice before I threw in the towel. But there's a certain thing that happens to you, and I don't know about you, but this is the way I look at repair patients. You either, once you have your first or second bad procedure and it's obvious something's on top of your head that's not put there by God.
Right. Yeah.
You change and you do one of two things. You either withdraw almost like a hermit under a hat or something that covers up, you're almost put in a position. Actually, a lot of guys are put in a position where they don't take certain jobs that they can't wear a hat.
Dude, I actually screwed this broad with a hat on, with a baseball cap.
That's just showing off.
But what she said is, I lived the same life you did. After that, like, I had to prove something, like, you know, I'd be in bar, you know, and it's like, you go through this thing. It's like, I have to prove everything's good.
Well, it was proving it to myself, and it was also part of the whole medication process. You know, I was probably drinking as much as every other 21 or 22 year old kid, but it was like the drinking and the sex. It was like, it was like, you're right. It was like, I had to be able to make this happen. Otherwise, it would prove to me that this hair loss thing is going to ruin my life, and I couldn't allow it to ruin my life.
Yeah, I've been the opposite. Like, I won't wear a hat. Like, it's like, I'm not going to wear a hat. I can't, because I used to have to wear one, so now I can't stand wearing one for that reason. It's like, I won't wear one just because I used to have to.
Well, that's interesting. I used to feel like I had to as well, but I still like, because I don't want to have to. I don't want to have to paint my head, or I just feel like running out of the house and going to the store or getting a hamburger or whatever it is.
There's a point where I can do that. See, I can do that. I have that much, is what I'm saying. That's why I don't want anyone pulling them out. And I just am so happy, like in the 90s, I didn't let the doctor say, well, I'm going to pull these plugs out and put these in.
Oh, no, I wake up in the morning?
That would have been the butcher.
I look like Doc from Back to the Future when I wake up in the morning. I mean, my hair is insane. So I either
But now I don't care anymore. That's what I mean. It's like, I'm past, like, that's fine with me as long as it doesn't look like it's a hair transplant.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. If you go, your hair looks crazy, that to me, I'm happy.
You know, I get it.
That makes sense. You know, it's like, good. I can live with that.
When I had before I got repaired and I had bedhead, it looked like I had 15 hairs sticking up out of my head out of one spot.
Yeah, that's the part you're talking about. Like, there's something, you said it very well a minute ago, there's something unnatural on your head.
Yeah.
That's right?
It wasn't there when you...
Well, I literally have something unnatural on my head.
No, but you really don't.
No, I'm talking about the paint in the back of my head. I mean, I actually paint my fucking head.
But it looks natural.
I have to use some derma match up. But no offense, Mitzer, you're doing good. What we're talking about is, like, it's still all, at least it's natural. I mean, it's whatever it is, it is.
Oh, no, I get it. I don't take offense to it. And I basically was trying to crack a little joke there. But I get what you're saying. I mean, God almighty, I can't even imagine what, and I talk about this all the time, Joe. I don't mean to make you feel bad because you've gotten past it, but I can't even imagine what you went through. And that would have happened to me if I made that same decision. And for some reason, I just had the wherewithal not to move in that direction. And, you know, I don't know what it was. It was just,
it worked out for me. I'm glad I did. Because, I mean, I was lucky in the sense, you know, I had, you know, thick enough, coarse enough hair that, you know, there's been some bad moments. And it's like, why is it taking so long to get ready kind of crap? You know what I mean? That kind of stuff. That's the freedom, Joe. You're talking about that. That's the day I'm looking for.
It's the freedom from the 45 minutes in the bathroom with the door closed and the fan on to suck out all the excess fumes, right? So you don't pass out.
Yeah.
But it's also,
you don't hear the hairspray can.
It's also the issue of walking down the street and it starts to rain or after rain. This is the worst. It's not raining any longer. Your guard is down and you walk under an awning and the largest raindrop in the world collects and falls and lands smack dab in the middle of your head, and then you feel it running down the top of your scalp
through
to your forehead.
Yeah, through your head. It's
like, and you're sitting there like,
the random, you're sitting around and the person walks by randomly, grabs your head, your hair, and then you have to go into a whole story.
Oh, I'm telling you, I've turned into like, I'm like a kung fu master when it comes to that.
Yes.
Like I can catch flies with chopsticks just because I had to learn how to keep my guard up.
Yeah, isn't your guard always up?
Yeah.
And that's part of what I'm talking about with your mental state is there's always a percentage of your brain power being exercised to pay attention to your hair and the conditions that are surrounding you that will influence your hair.
So you got that release, right?
I don't. It's a release only in the fact that brain power has been converted to looking to see how it looks, but not out of concern, but out of happiness, out of like, hey, yeah, how's it look in this light? It's almost a narcissistic type of change to where I look at my hair and I'm looking to see if I'm going to like it, if that makes sense. Not if it's looking great.
While we're on the subject, and I don't mean to like be monopolizing.
No, that's all right. We are going to take a call in a second, but you're always a great caller, so I appreciate giving you this time.
This is an important topic, though, anyway, because people beware. And what I have a question about, so now I can't help but look, and I'll go on the internet and look at these sites and pictures of people, and then I'll see the Bosley commercials. And I'm going, man, they have full heads of hair.
Yeah.
What could that have been me? I mean, is that real?
Well, I will tell you this. There are, Bosley's come a long way, and there are some patients who, who have hit kind of like the perfect storm. And from certain angles, it will appear to be a really full-looking head of hair. I would say that the vast majority of patients who have hair transplants aren't going to, they're not going to look like some of these models look. That's just the way that it is, and there are.
That's with any clinic.
Yeah, that's with any clinic. I mean, just basically, if you understand anything about lighting, just by changing a little bit of the angle of light or the reflection of the light, it really makes.
Believe I know all about that.
you do it yourself. But I mean, it really is that easy to manipulate.
Now that you bring it up, have you ever had that, like you think it looks good and then you see yourself in a different light, you go, what the hell is that?
Dude,
listen. That's the story of my life, dude.
Short story, but I used to use something like the precursor to Topic and Cuvray and Dermatch and all that. It was called GLH Hair in a Can.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that?
Sure.
Ron Popeil. On late night infomercials.
I used to
use that crap.
I used to use Kohl. Yeah. I'm just kidding. That's how old I am.
but I used to use this. A friend of mine turned me on to it, and being in my early 20s and just not knowing my ass from a hole in the ground, I still thought my hair was a lighter shade of brown than it really was, and I hadn't recognized the color change as I turned into an adult.
That's awesome.
And so I kept ordering the light brown or dirty blonde.
Yeah.
Can of this stuff, and I thought it looked fine. I thought it looked great. I was so happy. This is after my hair transplants. I was about 25, and I was about a Norwood 4/ Norwood 5, but with a pluggy hairline. So things were looking bad at 25, and my friend turned me on to this stuff, and I started using it religiously. Oh my God, this is like the greatest thing. It's just, Spencer knows what I'm talking about because of what he does. And, lots of guys out there know what I'm talking about.
How dare you? I don't even know.
I know. I'm such a bastard. But the thing is I didn't realize that it was probably two shades too light. And it wasn't until I saw a picture of myself at a formal that I'd gone to with my girlfriend at the time. I'd gone up to it was some all women's college in Virginia, in Blacksburg, Virginia. I don't know how far you are from there.
They're not far.
But I forgot the name of there's a women's college there. I forgot the name of what it's called. But I was there for this formal, tuxedos and all, and I got the photographs back like 3 weeks later. It was the film days, and I looked like a skunk. I already stood out because I was wearing a white tuxedo when everyone else was wearing black. That I planned.
And you were missing a tooth at the time, I think.
And I was missing, exactly. And I had a horn coming out of my head. But
right.
I had like this streak going right down the middle of my head that was blonde, and I had dark brown hair. I looked like the biggest idiot.
Yeah.
And even then, I couldn't stop using the stuff.
My hair is really salt and pepper. It's a little bit more salt and pepper now. It's hard to tell on camera, so it's difficult to use.
It always looks brown on camera.
Yeah, it's difficult to use. I mean, I can be red in the light. You can see it's a little gray, but it still looks dark. But I could be, I try to use I ordered like the dark brown, and I have to kind of use it in a really camouflage type of way where I kind of almost have to spread it out, kind of mix some of my gray hair within it, you know, and I comb it over, because you can't really do salt and pepper with concealer. It doesn't work well.
See, that's what I had to say, because I have to use a little, like, I use, you know, the Duramatch stuff, and it thickens it up.
So I'm going to have to eventually, like, switch over to their gray, so I'm just going to have, like, a white spot on the back of my head. And don't think that doesn't give me anxiety.
I want to be normal. I want to see, like,
not going to happen, dude.
Half of my years.
We're never going to be normal. Even if we get all of our hair back, it's affected us to the point where we can never be normal.
Our neural pathways.
Right. Well, that's what I mean. I compensate. Like, I'll work out 6 days a week. You know what I mean? So I want other things to focus on positive. Like, I do a lot of other things and say, I'm doing this in a positive way, in my OCD way. You know that?
Yeah, I'm the same way. I strive to be, you know, like, really successful in life, and I, you know, I exercise, and I, you know, I try to keep my shit together as much as I can, but I still paint my fucking head. That's just the way that it is.
That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, people say to me, oh, you're lucky, you know, kept your hair, and God, it's like, what a complicated statement that is.
Well, listen, dude. I'm gonna take some more phone calls. No, do not apologize. It's a great phone call, and I wish you would call more often, because you really have.
Yeah, I'm gonna call after I talk to him. I'll let you guys know what the next step is.
Yeah, and do me a favor. You can say that you heard about him through the IHRS and us and all that stuff, but really take your time. Don't jump into surgery, and let him know that we both told you not to jump into surgery. You're just going in to kind of get him an assessment and to have a consultation and to see whether or not he thinks even doing a small procedure is going to make that much of a difference on you.
Yeah, and I don't want a major deal anymore. I'm not going to do that. I'm not doing a major thing at this point, because I don't want to go backwards.
No, dude. Well, I don't even think you should do a minor thing. If you're going to start, you're going to. I mean, you know what? Have the consultation, see what he has to say, and get back to us.
Yeah.
All right, dude. Well, listen. Good luck.
All right.
Great talking to you. Take care.
Thanks for calling.
Bye.
888-659-3727. We did have a lot of people on hold, and actually Andrew Zarin was on hold for a long time. He just hung up. So I'm going to take a break. Guys, call back, 888-659-3727. I want to apologize, Joe, for the echo. Andrew was saying that he couldn't hear you when he was on hold, so I was trying to work with your aux send, and obviously I was sending you.
That's what that was.
I was sending feedback, your voice, back to you.
You bastard.
That always fucks things up. Guys, we're going to take a quick break, and we will take more phone calls when we come back. Again, 888-659-3727. You're listening to and watching The Bald Truth. Stay with us.
Coast to coast and worldwide.
You know, I just want to say, you know, you guys are doing a great thing. It's such an uncomfortable topic to talk about, especially for a guy, you know, young guys in their early 20s. And, I'm glad that I could tune in and, listen to you guys.
Spencer Coburn's The Bald Truth.